I'm Gab, he's Jules, cloudy and cold skies over West London, but not over Merseyside, where Liverpool are through 4 wins out of 4. We're going to be looking at that, but Jules, it's a crazy PR, it's a crazy Champions League week. So much going on. Yeah. Antonio Conte's in at Tottenham. Did say Champions League, not quite Tottenham, not yet anyway, but we've got so many other things. Barcelona get a huge win, their hunt continues.
Cristiano Ajax saving United and Solskjaer again.
I'm lost for words. I'm lost of superlatives. We're going to get into all that. But let's start at Anfield. Yep. Because they were coming off a game at the weekend where, you know, Liverpool had surrendered a 2-0 lead to Brighton. They had, and I'm surprised more people aren't talking about this. In midfield, that was an injury crisis. That is an injury crisis. Curtis Jones, this black eye, so he can't play. They had to start Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who really hasn't played very much at all in a long time, really isn't a central midfielder. They started Fabinho, who's great, but just first game back from injury. Still a big call. They're playing an Atleti team who admittedly have a ton of injuries themselves. And boom, 20 minutes, they're 2-0 up, never look back.
Incredible. Similar start, to be fair, to the reverse fixture 2 weeks ago where they started so well as well. The difference this time is that they kept the score. But it's just the ball from Alexander-Arnold on the first goal is magnificent. To the point that I'm even surprised that Atleti didn't have, in the way they prepared for this game, something or someone saying, okay, we cannot let Alexander-Arnold picking up those kind of a bit more central position in the last 30 yards and ping the ball and cross the ball that way.
You would expect
that someone like Carrasco would just push out.
Yeah, so I wondered about that, right? In that system, in that 3-4-2-1 that they were effectively playing with Correa and João Felix, my guess is actually they asked Carrasco to track the winger.
Yeah, probably.
And it should have been whoever was on that side, João Felix, probably, to go, or possibly Correa, to go and pick him up.
Yeah, because you can only give him all that space. It's crazy.
Yeah, and they just kept going and going. Yeah. They could have had a lot more, they could have had many more opportunities. Only blight on the evening, obviously, Firmino coming on at halftime, coming off. We'll find out more. It looked to me like a muscular injury.
Yeah, it does. And Klopp said we wanted to control the game and we controlled it well in the second half once Atleti were down to 10 men and the 2-0 lead. And to lose Firmino when you wanted to slow the game down and just control it, it's really unfortunate.
What I thought was interesting was about Atleti's approach. It's almost like a stereotype that while they're trying to be more expansive, they're not as good defensively. Clearly, there were some defensive
blunders. Yeah, Savic missing is a big loss.
Equally, those people who say, though, like, oh, the Atletico of old, they're gritty, they're defensive, blah, blah. You know, that's kind of like, hey, 2018 called and they want your take on Atletico back. Because they haven't, they're different. They try to play football.
If
I play effectively a front three, plus De Paul with Koke in midfield, I'm not going to be able to defend in the same way. I will try to take the game more to the opposition. But still, they don't look comfortable doing that.
No. We saw them really good against Betis doing that. I guess maybe that was a step too high away at Liverpool against this Liverpool team that is so strong, you know, in the front five pretty much, the two-box midfielders and the front threes and the fullbacks as well, even if Robertson was not playing. So maybe that was a step too high for them to sort of develop that kind of football. But also the red card for Felipe, which is a big moment in the game. Even if Liverpool were walking on them, once he gets sent off, and you know what? I'm happy he got sent off. One, I hate those cynical fouls, and two, if the referee says to you, "Come here," like if your teacher say, or if like your dad say, "Come here," if you don't go, your dad is going to lose his chisel. It's the same for the referee.
I would love to know. In fact, we're taping this Thursday morning. I want to take a deeper dive and to see what the Atleti media say, because what possible reason could there be for you not to walk over to give the referee call?
It's crazy.
Does Felipe think, oh, if I ignore him, then he can't book me or he can't send me off?
I'm going to be that transparent. I'm going to pretend that he can't see me, I can't hear him.
And this is another thing, which I think clubs don't think enough about. When you're playing out, the referee is important. I know, we used to say, oh, referees are the same, they do the best. No, they're not. Some referees are very good, some referees are less good, some referees have certain personalities. You can wind them up.
Some are strict.
A few years ago, there was one club who for a while employed a former referee to help coach the players on how to approach this referee.
Yeah.
I'm surprised more don't do it because you know, with Danny McAleer, not that he's some crazy strict guy, he's a very good referee. You know that is not the referee with which to do that. You know, because this is a referee with tons of personality.
Yeah.
And if you get in his face, he'll get in yours in a very calm way, but he's not somebody who you're going to rattle.
Completely.
So that was
Felipe is experienced enough. You know
he
what?
He should know better. No question about it. Jules, I want to talk a little bit about the two managers before we dive further into the two teams, because obviously in the first leg, I think it's something we should address and get out of the way.
Yeah.
At the end of the game, there was a little bit of aggro because Klopp went and offered to shake Simeone's hand. Simeone didn't take it. Simeone left. Afterwards, they gave the usual words about, you know, we totally respect each other. Simeone said, I'm paraphrasing here, Cholo, don't get angry. He says, look, I think it's kind of an empty gesture after games. I respect the other guy anyway. I'm not going to go through ritual. It's just something I don't do.
Yeah.
And Klopp said, well, if he doesn't do it, I'm not going to make him look bad by walking around
this. I know.
And try to show him
up,
right?
And
where do you stand on the handshake?
What's wrong with a handshake? Well, like before and after the game, this is what you do. Two tennis players do it before and after. Everybody does it. Why would Cholo Simeone start to think, you know what, I'm different. I'm not going to shake anybody's hands.
Has he started to think this, or has it always been like this?
I can't remember. Again, I'm not always.
It's something I've never noticed
at the end of the game. Yeah. I don't know if he did it against Pellegrini and Betis at the weekend, or if he's happier when he wins and he's very happy to shake your hand if he's beaten you. More than if you won a game like the reverse fixture at the Wanda, where he was clearly frustrated by the defeat. I don't know. I mean, obviously, when he's suspended, he's in the stands. He can't shake hands. That's why maybe he's happy to be in the stands. He can shout as much as he wants, gesticulate, doesn't have to shake anybody's hands. I don't know. I find that odd, really odd, that he doesn't want to shake people's hand after the game.
It is odd. It got me thinking about sort of the rituals, like you know, before the game, and went all the way back to the Don Terry, Wayne Bridge situation, you know. Some people saying, oh, why bother shaking hands before the game? It's after the game. I mean, I think these are all norms and conventions that we have in football, in general, in society. It's kind of like, okay, you grew up in Paris, right?
Yeah.
So you're a big city. I'm assuming in Paris, and I am digressing here, apologies. In Paris, when you walk down the street, people come in the other direction.
Yeah.
And you don't nod and say hello to them if you don't know them, right?
No.
However, when you're in the countryside in some small village in Provence or whatever, and there's nobody in the village and you're walking along and you see the guy coming
that's
towards
because
you.
People are nicer outside of the big capital.
Okay. Paris is a bit of a special case. People really are not nice in Paris, right? Unless you're Parisian. But you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
There is a convention for a place. And in football, this is generally part of the convention. When the game is over, you don't disappear down the tunnel.
No.
And people notice. And I think Cholo knows that. So I don't know if it was look, Cholo can do whatever he wants, right?
Yeah, clearly.
But I thought it was big of Klopp. And another word on Klopp, before the game, Klopp spoke of Josh Cavallo, the Adelaide United player who obviously came out publicly.
Yeah.
We believe he's the first active male footballer to come out so publicly while still playing.
Wasn't it Rodgers at LA Galaxy?
I think Robbie Rodgers had retired and then he came back. Stupid thing to debate, right? There's others.
Yeah.
I think it was Glenn Hussein's son as well, but whatever, right? But I was struck by one thing about the fact that Klopp said, like, I've been in the game 30 years and people never ask me if I'm heterosexual. Klopp presumably is or he isn't, but like, it struck me about that, and he said, and hopefully there'll be a time when Josh doesn't have to go and announce it. It doesn't have to be a story, right? And I completely get where he's coming from. I think it's great that he's had this level of support around the world. I said the game itself, when I look at Atletico this season, you know, earlier I would have said, they have a strong chance at winning La Liga. They can do something in Europe because they're more multifaceted. Because when everybody's fit, this is a really deep team with a lot of alternatives. And so this is not maybe the game in which to judge them, because you've got Savic out, you've got Griezmann out, you've got Kondogbia out, you've got Lemar out, and you have Marcos Llorente out, right? And obviously they weren't all going to play, perhaps, but you would have had more options to adjust things.
Yeah, it does feel though that they'll be stuck in between two identities, two style of play. And versatility is great, and you can play different formation, different style, of course. But I think because with Simone everything is so defined, I think they're really caught in between, okay, do we play really deep? Do we have more of the ball? What do we do? And I think at times against Porto, they were very average in that 0-0 draw. Against Milan, they should never win that game.
No.
Against Liverpool, maybe a draw is the fair result in the reverse fixture, but certainly on Wednesday night, they don't deserve anything out of that game. Okay, they played for an hour or a bit less, 10 against 11, but still, they were far, far inferior to Liverpool. And even in La Liga at times, we've seen them hot and cold and not really always knowing what to do with the ball. And I just think this is a problem. And I don't know if the answer is, okay, just focus on one style or just try to make your team better at a bit of everything. But it's, I think it's, it could be difficult for them going forward.
I think what doesn't help is if you're the sort of team that, you know, likes having the ball, likes taking the game to the opposition, is very comfortable that way. It's not just about having talented players. Mm. It's also about having chemistry, right? Having the right players around you who can develop those automatisms, I think we called them once, right?
Yeah.
One of those words, it doesn't exist in English. Because,
no, but it exists in our languages. So.
Well, because it's football, and English people and football don't always really mix, right? but it's really difficult to do if one game Griezmann plays, the other one João Félix plays, and Correa's in and out. Suarez, you know, can play.
Yeah.
And in midfield, too, right? Keeps continually changing. I still believe in Cholo. I think if he gets it right, if he gets the injured players back, I think they can make a strong run, not just in La Liga, but in the Champions League as well.
Yeah. I'm with you. They should. They certainly should.
As for Liverpool, I'm sure I've seen Tsimikas play before. I just don't remember. I was glad I got to see him.
Started the season
night.
Because Robertson was injured at the start.
You're right. He did play at the start of the season. Alexander Arnold, phenomenal. We criticize Atletico for not perhaps being aware of him, which again, hindsight's always 20/20.
I know,
but if I'm talking about where the balls are going to come from, right? For the front three, where is the service going to come from?
Yeah.
I know that there's no Thiago Alcantara. I know that Fabinho's only just come back. I know Oxlade-Chamberlain, who didn't do badly, by the way, is in there, but he hasn't played much. And I know there's no Robertson.
And
it's going to come from TAA. Yeah,
completely.
There's nobody else.
That's why I was really surprised watching the game that there was not almost like an anti-TAA plan or something to just reduce his activity, because I suspect that Atleti prepared that game watching videos. He's got 5 assists in 11 games now. I think he's won every 140 minutes, which is crazy, which is by far his best ratio since he broke through that first team at Liverpool, even better than 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Didn't he have like 18 assists 2 years ago or something, or three years ago?
Yeah, he had 12 in the league, because him and Robertson, remember, had that assist race. But he has already started better than any of those seasons. And yet, you don't put anything in place to make sure that he doesn't have that kind of impact on the team, and certainly not so early on the game, because once that goal from Jota goes in, you know it's going to be even more difficult now for Atleti. And I was just surprised. I love the fact that Jota knew exactly where the ball was coming. You know, he was just ready. He knew that Trent would not control the ball, that he would whip it the way he did straight away. And I think that's perfect. And they must train that and practice that. We say for all the basketball fans that, I don't know, Steph Curry does 1,000 shots every day, you know, between 500 and 1,000. I suspect in my head that Trent does 500 crosses every day at training and just whips the ball between the goal and in the 6-yard box all the time like that, because they're so precise and so lethal. It's incredible.
Now, I wonder about this, because this is an old bugbear of mine, but he started out obviously as a central midfielder, right? And I think he played that continually until he was tried at right back. I'm wondering, some of these very gifted on the ball central midfielders, can they be recycled?
You said about Reece James. You often say about Reece James.
Well, David Alaba is another one. João Cancelo. I don't know João Cancelo if he's always been on the wing, but he certainly looks like a central midfielder. I'm wondering if it isn't something that maybe other teams should look at. I guess the question is, obviously, as a fullback, it's athletically much more demanding than being a central midfielder, right? And because you have to, you don't just have the stamina, you need to have the sprint as well, right? To the recovery. So maybe that cuts it down. But to me, this is an attacking position, right? The fullback position in the modern game, especially top teams. So I just look at what these people can bring to the table, and I'm hugely impressed. A word on Mane, because it looked to me like he was very close to getting sent off in the first half, and he was extremely.
It was feisty, yeah. It was a bit feisty.
I mean, does Mane get wound up? Certainly out of Liverpool's
front three
or four, if you want to add Jota or Firmino. The other guys seem a lot mellower, and it is Mane, right?
Yeah, I think, but maybe he's the one that receives even more than Salah, who gets kicked the most, maybe. Well, certainly he felt like that last night. And by the way, on the Mane goal, it's not a cross by Trent, right? For all the praise that we've given Trent so far on the show, and this.
Mind reader?
It's a shot, 100%. Even Nicolas Anelka said it on French TV.
Oh, well, hey, Nicolas Anelka said it, so he must know.
I think he's missed a few shot that became crosses that ended up as an assist. So
I like to believe it was a cross. He knew exactly what he's doing.
You're right. Mane at times you can tell he's a bit like, the one to react. And but for example, if you go back to the red card, Felipe, it can't be nice if you're that player. That was Mane in this case, but anyone, whatever level, again, when you go on the counter attack and the guy from behind just kicks you out and put his studs as well on your calf, that would wind up even the most calm individual in the world.
By looking at Liverpool, I kind of feel we're at slight crossroads here. And I'm going to go back to this central midfield issue. Right? Obviously, Gini Wijnaldum left, hasn't been replaced. Now you have Curtis Jones, looks like, I don't know when he's going to be back. I read somewhere that he needs to be
but
like...
He's been in and out. He had little injuries all the time.
Yeah, now the eye thing, who knows, right? Oxlade-Chamberlain's contract is winding down, and maybe you get something out of him, but I wouldn't put all my eggs in the Oxlade-Chamberlain basket for obvious reasons, given his injury record. Thiago Alcantara is not going to get more durable as he gets older. Should they make a real push in January? Should Klopp go knocking and say, hey,
I think you can,
Mr. Edwards, before you leave, can we have another body in central midfield?
I know, but don't forget they will also lose Salah and Mane for the African Cup of Nations. So if maybe there's a position that you just need someone there, a body, before midfield, assuming that you get everybody back from injury, so you have Thiago available and Fabinho and Henderson, and also Chamberlain and Kirsty Jones.
And Keita.
And Keita. If Keita's not going to the African Cup of Nations.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So I don't know, but I think they need to get that midfield sorted for January, February, because when you lose Salah and Mane especially, then I think you need a lot from your midfield to sort of cover, because right now Minamino, Origi and Jota is not going to do it as much, so you need more input, I think, from midfield too.
So maybe
you're right, maybe sign someone, maybe get someone on loan or whoever you were going to buy in the summer, like Hoffman, for example, who's off contract, or I don't know, whoever you want, maybe move that forward for 6 months. I don't know.
I think it's definitely something to look at and something we might see. But in any case, Liverpool through, perfect, 4-4.
And top of the group, we're ready with 2 games to go.
Guaranteed first place.
It's really rare that. Really, really rare.
Obviously, the question everybody in Portugal, Spain, and even Italy, because Milan aren't out yet. Mathematically, they said, "Ooh, are you going to try in the last 2 games?" Klopp said, "No, we want to win everything." If I'm Klopp, I'm going to say this right now. If I'm Klopp, I have no problem if you play the Williams brothers and Phillips, whoever you want. There's somebody named Morton on the bench. I have no idea who he is. Play him.
Yeah,
like, honestly.
A young goalkeeper with the name that you can't pronounce, that we can't pronounce.
Quavin Keller. Play him and Adrian.
Yeah,
play Keller up front.
Exactly.
Right? No, like, seriously.
But I love that how Klopp said, winning this competition, winning games, bring money. Not to me, but to the club. Yeah, of course. Like, what is it, 1.3 million per win or something?
I would have no problem with it. They need to push in the league. They need to keep players safe and keep them healthy. And that's got to be the priority. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Klopp, enough Cholo. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Okay, Joes, we're so used to it, we just start taking it for granted. Cristiano Ronaldo saving Manchester United's bacon against Atalanta again, every game.
Again and again and again. This is incredible. He's incredible. We knew how goat he was and an alien. Call him whatever you want. Extraordinary, amazing, fantastic, out of this world, another planet, whatever you want. But to do it the way, the first goal is the only good move by United the whole game. That triangle between Greenwood.
That was really pretty though. Should have been worth more.
Yeah, but I don't know if they can, but certainly that was great. The second goal, however, to score it that at that time of the game, when you've been under pressure for so long, you should maybe be 3-1 down already. To hit it the way he did, it's not even
it's
a chance,
so awkward,
it's half a
too.
Chance.
It is, really is half a chance.
We should have been cleared twice by Atalanta already. So they have their part of responsibility. But still, for him to be in that position at that time of the game, after everything that he did, all the running, all the activity, blah, 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 everything, to hit it so cleanly and so precisely because a couple of centimeters right, and I think Musso touches it, maybe he goes on the post or whatever, it's just incredible. I mean, 91st minute or 92nd. There's nothing else you can say.
All right. Very simple question. If at the end of the summer, Jorge Mendes hadn't decided to fly around Europe trying to get a new club for Cristiano, if he wasn't at United, would Solskjaer still have a job?
It's hard to say because you could also say that without him...
What, that Anthony Martial would have done that?
No, but maybe collectively... I don't know. I think it's too hard to say, but maybe not.
I'll answer that question for you. The answer is no.
They would have played differently without him, though, this season.
Yeah, well, the way they played differently and so effectively without him in previous years? No, I think the answer is no. Because the whole team has become worse, I think, in many
yeah,
ways.
Maybe.
And it's got nothing to do with Cristiano.
He's incredible. He saved them.
Atalanta, I think, we praise them, whatever. I think they'll be kicking themselves a little bit. That game was there for the taking.
Completely. And you know, maybe for them it's better to go into the Europa League and they can win that. They will never win
the
Champions
League.
League.
They want to be Villarreal and they want to go. What do we do? They'll never win the Champions League.
Okay, you win the Champions League. You remember Real Madrid again. You are in the last 16. Okay.
I'm sorry. They played Paris Saint-Germain.
And
you guys were within seconds
of
going out.
Can they win the Champions League? Can they win the Champions League? Answer it. Yes or no? Can they win the Champions League?
Why not?
No, come on.
Why not?
Come on. Bayern Munich, Manchester City, they're not as good as those teams.
Yes, there are better teams in the Champions League.
Can they win the Europa League?
Of course, they can win anything.
No. Okay.
I'm not putting any limits.
They can win the Europa League. They cannot win the Champions League. For me, it's better that finish third. They go into the Europa League. They win that. It would be incredible for Atalanta and Bergamo as a city to win a European Cup like Europa League, but they can't win the Champions League.
I wish we could time travel back to 2015 and hear Jules' view.
That's not the point.
Come on, man. Come on.
Juventus beat Zenit 4-2 to make it 4 wins out of 4 in the Champions League. Gab, why are they so good and find it easier in the Champions League than in Serie A?
Because the Champions League is of a far lower standard.
It's easier.
No, look, I think every game has a different story. You know, against Chelsea, when they beat them, I don't think they were great at all. They were just purely defensive against Zenit in the first leg. They did not play well. Tonight, I actually think it was a reaction to Allegri after the weekend, sequestering them away. Sometimes it works. They went out there. Chiesa was phenomenal. Dybala was good too. Yeah. Morata looked confident. Hopefully, they build on this. I think it's as simple as that. Let's not draw these weird parallels. Barcelona get the 3 points they needed away to Kiev thanks to Ansu Fati. Jules are turning this around. At least it's the Champions League.
Yeah, but we knew that the game against Benfica was always going to be the key game, really, after they lost those first two games because they were it was.
Well, if they lose this one, then it.
No, but I know, but it's more likely that you beat Kiev, home and away. You know, and they didn't. They were not great in either games. 1-0, 1-0. PK on Sufati, the symbol, blah blah blah. Sergi Bahouan on the bench. Where, by the way, I think he was sent off when he was played against Dynamo Kiev when Shevchenko scored the hat trick in 97 or something like that.
Jules dropping the knowledge.
Yeah, you know. But you take the win and you move on. Xavi is going to come now, and that's good. But you're right. They're starting to turn this around, and it's good for them. And talking about Xavi, you and Laporta and the delegation of Barcelona in Qatar right now to sort out the last remaining details, I guess, of the move.
Yeah, I actually tweeted a picture of this last night from some Qatari website or Twitter account where you it's a table outdoors and you see like three Catalan-looking dudes on one side of the table, three Qatari-looking dudes on the other side of the table. Laporta's there. Can I just refer back to what I said about the timing of Koeman's thing? You do this if Xavi's in the bag. You don't do it at that time.
Ah, come on. It's a week ago, the psych team.
Well,
the Dutch guy.
Yeah, but remember all those people saying, oh, they have a deal in place already. He's coming. No, they got nothing. And I hope this is just a courtesy visit and Al-Saad doesn't make it difficult for them.
It will happen.
I hope
they had the game last night, as we said before.
No Messi and Paris Saint-Germain are held 2-2 by Jesse Marsh's Leipzig, who also missed a penalty. By the way, Donnarumma penalties.
Yeah, he knows how to do it.
Jules, was this a fair result? Come on.
They're so frustrating me right now, PSG. I go mad. They could have lost that game. Maybe it's a fair result, the draw. They were under pressure for most of it. Kimpembe giving away that silly penalty right at the end. But I don't think they deserve to win it either. They were, by moment, really brilliant. By other moment, really poor. I'm still not sure about what Pochettino is trying to do. But I guess you take a point away from home. But it's still far from where I expected them to be at this time of the season. That's all. That's all I would say.
I'm very happy for Wijnaldum. And I still say he should go back on loan for the second half, for Liverpool second half of the season.
Chelsea go minimalist to win away at Malmö 1-0 as Christian Pulisic makes his return and missed a big chance right there. And I think it was offside anyway. But your thought, Gab?
My thoughts are that there's nothing you can do against Malmo. It's hard to even get super motivated with this. I think the good thing is Hudson-Odoi and Pulisic show that, sorry, not Pulisic, Hudson-Odoi and Ziyech show that they can play, show that they're alternatives. Kai Havertz at center forward, I think that's still a very long, slow burn. It's weird to me to think you're in a situation right now where Lukaku, who wasn't there last year, is absolutely essential this year. But for those other positions, he's got tons of options, which we knew he had. Karim Benzema scores the 1,000th European goal for Real Madrid. Oh, what a coincidence. Who would have thought this?
The dream.
As they beat Shakhtar 2-1. Jules, they're going to go through, but this is a bit closer than it should have been, yeah?
Very much so, Gab. Shakhtar hit the post at 0-0, then they scored a really, really good goal to make it 1-1 after Benzema's opener, which came from a big mistake by Marlon and Vinicius and etc. And I think from watching the game, certainly it looked like the crowd was booing Real Madrid. I mean, their own fans.
And this was a strong Real Madrid 11, by the way.
Yeah, it was very strong. And Benzema in the end, very good second goal with Vinicius and Casemiro. But far from convincing from Carlos.
Carletto has some work to do.
Yeah,
we say it because we love.
Yeah. Tottenham have their new manager and it's Antonio Conte, Gab. You wrote a whole column about this.
Monday I said why this would make zero sense. And I think this is different Conte. The parallel I draw was Euro 2016 when, after leaving Juve in 2013, I guess he left Juve, he decides to go and he takes the Italy job. 2014, he takes the Italy job. Worst Italy squad in history. I mean, go back. This is the Giaccherini, Zaza, Eder, Pelé squad. And he decides to take it. And he works with what he has. He can't buy anybody. And he goes and he makes them better. And they do really, really well at the Euros.
Yeah.
I think you've used it like this. Because if this was a project, if there were promises of massive investment or whatever, then he wouldn't have signed an 18-month deal. Then it would be a longer deal. It would be more guarantees. I think he wants to go in. I think he likes some of the players there. They will bring some guys in January.
Yeah.
But he says, first and foremost, I'm going to make these guys better. I'm going to turn Ndombele back into what he was. I'm going to turn Kane back into what he was. I'm going to turn Dyer back into what he was.
Not sure.
Ryan Sessegnon, the forgotten man.
Is he still there?
He's still there. Wow. He's injured. And I'm going to push for top four this season, maybe get some money, and then next season,
we push further, and then we see where we are, right?
Yeah.
And then
that's fine.
Maybe the money will turn out. Maybe Joe Louis will decide, hey, I'm in my 80s. I can't take all this money with me. Why don't I put some into the club?
He's the best guy they could have got. I think this is the best way of putting it. There was no one right now they could have got as a club in the situation that they are now better than Conte.
I've been critical about him in the past because of the way he just walks out when people stop spending money, the way he views everything as a personal battle. But I have to tip my hat to him in this case because he's putting his reputation back on the line. He's putting himself back out there, and he could easily wait around for another big job where he knew he was going to get money. So kudos to you for that part.
Definitely.
Manchester City warm up nicely for the derby this weekend with a 4-1 win over Bruges. Jules, no De Bruyne, no problem.
Not really, Gav. I mean, Bruges came back with a freakish own goal by John Stones. Well, the nose of John Stones. Joao Cancelo in that game had 3 assists, okay, which is already amazing. Out of the 4 goals, he's involved in pretty much everything. He created 8 big chances. I'm going to say this again. Joao Cancelo, as a right-footed left-back, so it's not even really the best position he can play, created 8 chances in a Champions League game, which I find amazing. What a player he is. And you're right, they warm up nicely. Bring on the derby, I guess. And Pep says this is the best Manchester City team, the way they play, that he's had since arriving at the club. So we have to believe him.
All right, quickly rank the top three. At the position. Cancelo, Hakimi, Trent Alexander-Arnold.
It's too hard. By the way, Ashraf Hakimi, happy birthday, my friend. Porto draw 1-1 with Milan, which means only our arithmetic is keeping Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the Champions League. They need a miracle to go through. Gappioli says they don't deserve to go through if they don't win games like this. They were so poor.
They started poorly, big mistake, leading to a big mix-up with Bennacer and Calabria, which led to the goals. They were chasing the whole game. Porto played well. Mm. Porto deserved to beat them first time round as well. They're still in it arithmetically, but it is pretty far-fetched that they go through. You know, if you're Pioli, you make the best of it, and you focus on Serie A and the fact that you're still growing. Ajax do it again, beating up an injury-riddled Borussia Dortmund 3-1. Jules, this is exceptional achievement for Ajax. Much love.
Yeah.
You know, three little birds, all that stuff. But would it have been a different story without that weird Mats Hummels red card?
It was certainly very even before that red card, Gab, which, if you haven't seen it, Hummels goes for the tackle. Okay, there's studs first, but he doesn't touch Anthony. Anthony jumps, and then sort of lands on the leg of Hummels.
Hummels doesn't touch him, and he gets the ball, too.
Yeah, yeah. And right. Anthony just then rolls around on the floor, and Michael Oliver gives the red card after watching it on VAR. I was very surprised. I think he's really harsh.
Did he watch it?
I thought he watched it. No, maybe he didn't even
watch it.
He went to watch for the penalty that I think he gave as a compensation for Dortmund. So
I'm not
going to
blame Oliver here if you're going to look. He has a VAR. VAR, funny enough, this stuff always happens with English referees.
Stuart Atwell,
who's like, oh, whoa, was that a clear and obvious error? Dude, just ask yourself, would Michael Oliver want to see this again? It takes 2 seconds.
I know.
I mean, honestly, I don't want to be too exaggerated here, right? But these opinions, VAR is there for a reason. Take the extra seconds.
If
Dortmund get eliminated, this could end up, this is going to cost Dortmund, it could cost them 20, 30, 40 million. What? Just because you can't be bothered to pull your finger out and let Michael Oliver take another look?
I know.
Come on, man.
I thought that was crazy.
And why are they so bad?
The game changed. Even if Dortmund take the lead with that penalty, after that, Anthony and Haller, 7 goals, by the way, in 4 games, pretty incredible. Ajax, first ever Dutch team to win the first 4 games in a group stage. Inter travel to Transnistria and beat Sheriff 3-1. Gab, big relief for Simone Inzaghi ahead of the Milan derby this weekend.
It is. We didn't want to have this headache. You said, right, 6 points against Sheriff. Then we see where we are. They play well. Brozovic. The Broz. How about that? You know, when he lights it up, when he gets those little like red dots in his eyes. It was good to see. And they're definitely on a high heading into the big derby.
Alexis Sanchez. First goal in Champions League since 2017,
with, like,
man.
With his first touch as well.
What's incredible.
Villarreal beat Young Boys 2-0, which means they're joint top of the group. But, Jules, I suspect they're rather annoyed at the Unai Emery situation.
They were. The Roche family was not happy at all. Unai himself was not happy with all the leaks and all this, the thing, saying that it's pretty close, when he said, I've had interest from them, but no offer, no contracts on the table, nothing. Decided to stay.
Do we believe Unai Emery? Because, you know,
Yeah, St. Vincent doesn't have the best relationship with the troops.
Whoever is badly handled by Newcastle, full stop anyway. And I think they will have to learn now, the new ownership, to do things in a better way in the future. Speaking of Newcastle, according to reports now, Eddie Howe is the big favourite. What should we make of this game?
Eddie Howe,
Unai Emery,
Paulo Fonseca, Unai Emery. I don't know. This seems like the it seems like they're using the Tottenham playbook that we saw in the summer. I don't know. Eddie Howe, some people love him. Some people dislike him. Obviously, tremendous achievement getting up with Bournemouth. Maybe not so much in spending that money. We'll see.
Yeah.
Massive come-from-behind win for Lille away to Sevilla. Yeah. 2-1. Jules, this was impressive.
Well done. Very well done. I mean, they weren't beaten since May, Sevilla at home. Really good, as we've been seeing in La Liga. Maybe not as strong as they were last season in terms of the game and fluidity and what they do with the ball. But what a win for Lille. Incredible. Considering they hadn't won this season in the Champions League yet. They hadn't won since 2012 against Bate Borisov in the Champions League. Really well done to them. Jonathan David, Jonathan Ikone as well, with no Burak Yilmaz. Very good. And now the second in the group put themselves in a position to qualify. So
So they and Wolfsburg are both on 5 points. Yeah. And Salzburg is on seven. So I think they're in a pretty solid position.
I think so. You know, they will host Salzburg without Ikone and André, which is a bit of a blow, but they can replace them, Cheka, Timothy Weah, all of that. They still have options. And then Wolfsburg to finish it off. So I hope for them they qualify. Not that they can go much further than the last 16, but certainly I think it would be good for their momentum and the confidence and everything. Another Robert Lewandowski hat-trick, Gab, and Bayern destroyed Benfica 5-2. It's 4 wins out of 4 for them, too. I think they've scored already like 70 goals in 17 games. It's crazy. I bet you don't have any superlatives left for Big Robert.
So it's funny. They haven't actually won their Champions League group yet.
That's true.
But it's something, the goal difference is like plus 17 or something like that.
8-0.
Yeah, I think, you know, we can pretty much... I think it's phenomenal. I have to say, like, I shout out to Leroy Sané too, because he's one of my favorite players when he came over. I had a great season at City. Been really up and down. I think there have been a lot of situations where he's actually been part of the problem for Bayern.
Yeah.
But I think it's coming together very, very nicely for him. And I don't think it's anything you take for granted, because Bayern have a lot of competition in those wide areas. Sané's obviously responding to it, and he's responding to Nagelsmann, of course, who's back now as well. So roll on, Bayern.
And Lewandowski missed a pen as well, so he could have had a quadruple in that game. That was his 100th Champions League game.
Yeah.
He scored 81 goals now.
It is funny. I'm going to go back on this, because quick Ballon d'Or segment. As you know my thoughts on the Ballon d'Or, but I respect all the Ballon d'Or obsessives out there. The debate, I was watching this, the debate was like, oh, this is a big message to the Ballon d'Or voters. And I'm like, no, because the ballots are already in. And then they're like, oh, but this only reinforces their case that if they voted for Lewandowski, they should feel good about it. Yes, okay, it's that. But put you on the spot again. You cheekily avoided the right back question, but is he the best center forward in the world right now? I'm asking a guy wearing a green Benzema shirt. There you go. There you go.
Exactly.
Florian Kohfeldt leads the Wolves over the Saltmen in the Battle of the Bergs. See what I did there? That's pretty good.
Yeah, nice. Hey,
Saltmen,
nice.
That's kind of... But is it...
Very nice.
Did Salzburg come to, like... Was there actually salt historically? Were there salt mines there?
I would think so.
You would assume so, yeah. Jules, this group may be flying under the radar, but... This is going down to the wire.
As we've been saying, very exciting for the remaining two games between Sevilla, Lille, Wolfsburg and Salzburg. 2 wins in 2 now for Kohfeldt. Great goal by Mensah to make it 2-1. I thought it was very entertaining, the way they played. And Wolfsburg with the back three now seems to have a bit of an edge compared to what it was before with our friend Marc von Bommel. So very interesting to see the remaining two games in that group. A federal prosecutor in Switzerland has indicted former FIFA president Sepp Blatter and former UEFA president Michel Platini. Gab, what does this mean and why has it taken so long?
Okay, I'll take the what does it mean. There is a whole backstory to this. I don't want to bore people too much, but... basically, in 2011, mm-hmm. a lot of people assumed that Michel Platini, who was then the president of UEFA, would run against Sepp Blatter for the FIFA presidency.
Yeah.
Already rumors with Blatter, a lot of people didn't like him, blah, blah, blah. And then he decides,
not to run. I was at the press conference when he said, you know, there were, he had this great line, which was something like, there were more people who wanted me to stay at UEFA than wanted me to go to FIFA. Something like that, right? And then later, it emerges that around that time, FIFA authorized a big payment. I think it was a seven, it was definitely,
$2 million, I think.
Yeah, around $3 million to Platini. And the way they justified it was, oh, this is a payment for work that Platini did back in 1998 ahead of the World Cup in France for FIFA.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the fact that it's being paid now that you're deciding not to run. So obviously that raises a few eyebrows. Look, Platini's always maintained his innocence. Blatter's always maintained his innocence. Seriously, the timing, not a good look. And this is kind of one of the things that set the wheels in motion. This and the Don Raids in Zurich. The thing is, so they open an investigation into Blatter for what they call a disloyal payment. And then they later open an investigation into Michel Platini. This is 5 years ago. It's crazy that you can be under investigation
for so long
without bringing charges. I find, and bear in mind, in the meantime, obviously both Blatter and Platini were banned by FIFA and so on. I don't know. I have a little bit of sympathy, actually, because I don't think in any legal system, I don't think you should be, you know, you should be told you're under investigation.
Yeah.
And then you go 6 years
without being formally charged. I know. How can they be more guilty than they were 5 years ago?
So if I had to guess, and this is purely speculation, I think the reason it's taken so long, and they'll give other reasons, like the prosecutor changed 3 years ago, and then there was Blatter's final interview. He had to miss that because he was unwell at the time or whatever. I wonder if maybe there aren't other people who could be part of this mess, maybe part of this negotiation if it did happen, who they were seeing if they could either flip or get information on,
like
maybe
Infantino.
Some important. I don't think it's Infantino simply because he was in a totally separate role at the time. Obviously, he was at UEFA. I don't want to name names, I don't want to get in trouble, but there are certain people who played a big role in the scandal that brought down FIFA and who are still in and around the game. Let's just leave it there.
Yeah.
Sporting destroyed Besiktas 4-0. Jules, Ruben Amorim won't go quietly into that good night, nor should he.
They were so good, Gab, so entertaining to watch. Again, they will hit the limit at some point against a much bigger team, and Besiktas are not very good, especially when they are without Pjanic and Batshuayi and Vida and all of that. But this Sporting team was great. Pedro Goncalves was fantastic.
And Paulinho.
Paulinho scored a great goal, missed two big chances, but scored a really nice goal too. It was one of my games on BT Sport on the goal show, and I really love watching them. It was good. They're very open because they play so much attacking football, but really, really good to watch. So I hope they make it to...
You want to see Dortmund knocked out, don't you?
No, I don't. At least to the Europa League, because I think they deserve to continue in Europe.
I think they're short of being in the Europa League at this point. I mean, to me, the interesting thing is...
That's right, because...
It's them and Dortmund. Obviously, we think Erling Haaland will be back, but who knows?
It might be bad for match day six, but certainly not for match day five. So, yeah. Big game.
This is going to be absolutely huge.
It's going to be huge. Bild are reporting that Leipzig are trying to recruit Liverpool director of football Michael Edwards, who is leaving the club at the end of the season, which we know. Gab, does this make sense to you?
You know what? I find this is an underreported story. So I don't know about the Leipzig thing. I don't know Michael Edwards personally. I've only met the guy twice, I think, very, very briefly. But the guy who's really credited as being the architect of being able to marry the analytics with a lot of the good work Liverpool have done in the in transfers. I looked at Liverpool's net spend, incidentally, over the last 5 years, or really since Klopp has been there, and it's one of the lowest in the big six. I think Spurs might be lower, but very, very close. Mm. So this is tremendous. And he's leaving now at a time when they still have all those contracts left. So they've extended some of them, but obviously you still have Salah in play, you have Mane in play, you have Firmino in play. I don't know why he's leaving. I like the idea. He's still a relatively young guy. I think he's in his early 40s. How cool is it if he says, all right, I want to go to the Red Bull organization because I really admire what they do, what they work, you know, the way they work. It seems crazy to me that you would leave a club like Liverpool, which, you know, not a small club, right? And you go over there to people who are the club that's definitely smaller, but which has really blazed the trail in the way they work. Again, I don't know if the story's true. Build normally pretty good about this, about sourcing it. I'm more fascinated.
More than the Real Madrid, for example, because I think he will have big clubs too. So it would be down to him to choose. Either you go to the big club where you will have a bigger budget, and you might have more freedom to do what you want, etc. So
I don't think you would at Real Madrid.
No. But I'm saying Real Madrid before, to take an example of a big club. Or you go to a club like Leipzig that is built differently, that sees a transfer window in a different way, not the same budget, not the same money for wages either, maybe more younger player orientated. I don't know what's the most exciting or where he feels that his qualities would fit the best.
But that's what's so interesting about it.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who's at the top, or about as close to the top as you can be, who decides, I'm going to go and improve myself personally and professionally and again, he hasn't gone to Leipzig yet. It may not happen, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that he's even considering it, because I wonder.
But the only reason I'm saying that to you is because I think of Paul Mitchell, who, in a way,
right,
is very similar to Michael Edwards. They work differently, but, you know, like young and bright ideas, English, etc., who was in the RB group and decided to go to Monaco, where they see transfers in a very different way. It's a different ownership. It's a different club. And I think he wanted
before
that kind
Mitchell,
of challenge.
But we should tell people where he was before.
Yeah, he was at Tottenham.
He was at Tottenham. Before that, he was at Southampton.
Yeah.
So he was seen as this bright genius.
And he is very much so still at Monaco. So that's why I'm wondering what kind of path a Michael Edwards is going to go now in the light of what Mitchell has done.
What I would say about Mitchell, and I believe actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think actually he moved from Southampton to Tottenham before Tottenham even signed Pochettino.
Not long before, but
he was recruited by Franco Baldini when he was still at Tottenham. I don't think his departure from Tottenham was entirely down to him.
Yeah, maybe not.
Also, Tottenham, of course, hadn't achieved when he left. They hadn't achieved the success anywhere near the success that Liverpool have achieved under Michael Edwards.
Very true.
So, but I just wonder, if you're Michael Edwards, right, where can I go? You know, if you're thinking post-Leipzig, right?
Yeah.
Where do you go? Because Real Madrid, I don't think there's any director of football who's ever going to have that kind of power, right?
Yeah.
Barcelona,
Eric Abidal has done that job, so I think Michael Edwards would do a much better job.
Yeah, but Michael Edwards has never played for Barcelona, and they seem to value this stuff a lot at that club, right? I think he'd be tremendous at Manchester United.
Can you imagine
a Liverpool guy going to Manchester United?
I would have him at PSG.
There you go. This is the standard that we're talking. Because one thing we know is it's so difficult to find the guy who can talk and be taken seriously by the football man, and also understands and can be taken seriously by the scouts, by the analytics people. You know, Michael, listen, you're going to have time on your hands.
Yeah,
why don't you come
on the show?
Come on our show. Come on, man. You're on your way out anyway. Like, I find this story fascinating and underreported.
Yeah.
Rafael Varane will be out for a month. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needed this as much as he needed a hole in the head.
I suppose
you have the international break in between. But still, Jules, does this mean ditching the back three against City this weekend necessarily? Because Lindelof is injured.
Yeah, so Lindelof might be back maybe for the derby, which means Maguire, Lindelof, Bailly.
Who's the first option off the bench if you play that back three? It's Phil Jones or Tadeu Mendy, right?
Yeah.
Just want to check.
Yeah. But I still think that the back five would be good against City because of the way they play in the half spaces, and you would have more solidity.
Play Wan-Bissaka in the back three.
Yeah, Shaw has played back three in the derby before.
Yeah, but you need Shaw because otherwise you... I'm sorry, but you need Shaw to be able to attack down the wing.
Alex Telles can attack down the left. You know, Alex Telles is a very good left wing back.
But Wan-Bissaka is a better defender than Shaw. So
yeah.
You go Wan-Bissaka, Dalot, or
listen,
you go...
He's done the back five in the derby before
with
really good results. So I think this is the way to go again. I don't know if he will do it or not, but especially after the Atalanta game, this is the way to go. It's a shame that Varane is not going to be there because he brings so much serenity, I think, and calm to that defence when Maguire is still a bit all over the place. Maybe he's still not completely fit. I mean, Bailly and Lindelof, I don't even want to go there. So we'll have to see.
Can I throw you a curveball? What if you went Wan-Bissaka, Maguire, Shaw, and then you had Dalot and Alex Telles? And then,
I love Dalot as a right wing back, and certainly the quality of crossing is much better than Wan-Bissaka, for example. So that could work.
Cristiano and Eddie up front, and then McFred and Bruno. All right, sorry, kind of ruins it there. maybe if you do that, you can play Pogba and Bruno together in the three.
I know Pogba's on
Yeah. People didn't like his performance against the Atalanta.
But you know, at some point, I mean,
for me, this is the way to go. Certainly for that game. But we'll see what he does. Let's talk ESPN's Battle of the Leagues now, Gab.
Oh, yes.
My league and team has already qualified. Woo! For the semi-final, 2 wins in 2. I'll play your Bundesliga side next, my friend. Meanwhile, Frazier's Eredivisie beat Mark Ogden's Premier League. Hang on. The Eredivisie. The Premier League.
Yeah, all right. So put it in some context, right?
Wow.
So we're in Group A, me and Jules. I've got the Bundesliga, Jules' is Liga. We're in there with Rodrigo Faiz's Liga and a Natum's MLS team. Now, okay, I dominated MLS in the first game, 1-1, whatever. In the second game, Rodri, by the way, I guess you didn't notice, Rodri is a serious FIFA player, right? He does this
more than us, yeah.
Yeah, a lot more than us, right? And still, I drew 1-1. He's also because the weirdo decided to drop your boy Benzema and play Nicky Williams up front. I mean,
I'm glad I beat him in the first game.
So we're in a situation now. We're in the final game. If I beat you 1-0, not a big deal. You still win the group.
Yeah,
I get through.
I'm certain to finish top.
And I'm certain to finish second.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that Rodri and Nadim can do about it.
Yeah, let's meet after the show.
I want to see Messi playing in goal in this game. in the other group, by the way, I talk about car crash. How Mark Ogden gets beaten.
Mark Ogden, you're a disgrace.
Already in the first game, Kay Murray nearly beat him. They missed the penalty early on and so on. That was very, very close.
Yeah.
Mark Ogden, man, all over the place. I'm not sure FIFA's for you, man.
Nah.
Marca picked up a story that was originally L'Equipe saying that Paris Saint-Germain. By the way, we always have these at the end because they really are the gift that keeps on giving. This time, no Wanda, no Icardi, no prostitutes, no Bois de Boulogne. Instead, it's a story that the club are annoyed that the dominant language in the dressing room is Spanish and apparently sometimes English rather than French. Jules, is this a thing?
I don't think they're annoyed. What we hear is that I think there are people at the club who would rather French to be a bit more common at the training ground, also with the staff, you know, not just the football staff, but overall. But Pochettino, a lot of his training sessions, a lot of what he says to the players is in Spanish. He's got his son who speaks very good French, who studied in France. Miguel D'Agostino, one of his assistants as well. So French is there too, but there's a lot of Spanish. But also, if you look at the squad, you can understand that there's a lot of South American, Spanish players.
Yeah, but people like Di Maria who lived in France for 5 years, I would expect him to be able to understand French. I mean, I'm trying to think, the only people who really have no excuse for not speaking French are Lionel Messi, right?
Yeah.
And then other than that, I mean,
but you know how he works. I mean, come on. You know, players. Robert Pires spent like half his life in England, can still not speak English. So. Yeah.
And Pochettino, of course, was here. And remember all the many years when Pochettino was here, he pretended not to speak English.
Yeah, and Jesus Perez was doing the translation. It was always next to him, just in case.
That's awesome. You know.
Let's show some love for David Moyes, Gab, because he reaches the 1,000 game mark in the Premier League as a manager. Marwan Fellaini, remember, said that he cried when Moyes was sacked at United. Neil Warnock also had his 1,062nd game or something like that as a manager with Middlesbrough in midweek.
Why don't we talk about Neil Warnock when he gets to 1,000, not when he gets to 1,062
is the ultimate record, I think, in something like that, in English football or for English managers or something.
Couldn't happen to a nicer man.
He lost 3-1.
Yeah. I feel a bit fine. I really like David Moyes. I really like him as a person, of the privilege to spend time to him. So, you know, whatever.
Well done.
I can criticize him when he does badly, but 1,000. I also feel we're being a bit unfair to Steve Bruce because you also got to 1,000, and then we're all like, ha ha ha, you're getting sacked.
We didn't. We said they would give him the 1,000, and then you're going to get sacked.
I think I'm not surprised Fellaini said he cried. I wouldn't normally believe that a big burly man like Fellaini would cry. But then, face it, if you're Marwan Fellaini and you're at Manchester United and David Moyes gets sacked, I can see
you're in trouble.
Why you might shed a tear.
Yeah.
Right, that brings us to an end. But, Jules, we got to come back on Monday. It's Derby weekend in Manchester. And more importantly, in Milan,
in
San Siro, the greater.
In Sevilla as
arguably
well, a grand
Seville
derby.
By the way, arguably Seville derby, the best derby in Spain. A lot of people believe that. So tons are coming on. Tons going on. Let's come back on Monday, do this again. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.